the opening bell rings, and, well, honestly, the first minutes of a session decide far more than most traders give them credit for.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, whoever controls the open, you know, the early aggressor, the range they're willing to defend, that sets the reference point that the rest of the entire session will be measured against.
Right. You aren't just looking at random morning volatility. You are looking at the actual establishment of value.
Exactly. And that establishment of fair price, that is the baseline for everything that follows.
So today, we are digging into the tape reading strategies of seasoned order flow practitioners to figure out, you know, exactly how to decode that morning volatility. We're tracking this early fight as two nested boxes on the chart.
Yeah, the initial balance in the open range, the IB and the OR. Because as order flow and options flow practitioners, we can't rely on simply guessing momentum from like a sequence of green or red candles on a chart.
No, you need actual structure.
Right. We are tracking institutional footprints. When you look at heavily traded futures products like the ES, the S&P 500 futures, or the NQ, the NASDAQ futures, the participants moving those markets are operating with massive size.
They dictate where the line in the sand is drawn.
Precisely. So by isolating the first hour of trading, you are effectively drawing a box around their initial capital deployment.
And you watch this deployment unfold through those two specific metrics, the IB and the OR. To read the tape correctly, you really have to understand the difference between the fast read and the slow read of the session open. Okay, let's unpack this.
Sure.
I want to move away from the standard idea of viewing the morning session as just a battlefield and think about it more mechanically. Mm-hmm. Let's imagine a high-pressure industrial pipeline.
Okay, I like where this is going.
So the open range, which defaults to the first 15 minutes of the session, is like a pressure valve, instantly testing for surface leaks the moment the system is turned on.
Yeah.
It's the fast read. But the initial balance, which defaults to the first 60 minutes, that is the test of the actual structural integrity of the entire pipe.
That is a much more accurate way to model the market mechanics, honestly. And what's fascinating here is that because the 15-minute OR and the 60-minute IB compute from the exact same session open simultaneously, you get both reads at once on your chart.
You're watching the immediate pressure test and the structural integrity test simultaneously.
Exactly. But we need to look at why these specific time windows matter so much. The narrow 15-minute window captures the immediate reaction to, well, overnight positioning and morning macroeconomic data releases.
It's highly reactive.
Very reactive. But large institutions cannot execute their full daily size in 15 minutes without causing massive unfavorable price slippage.
Right. If a fund needs to move 10,000 contracts of the ES, they aren't just dumping market orders at 9.31 a.m.
Oh, they couldn't afford to if they tried. They use execution algorithms, you know, TWAP, time-weighted average price, or VWAP, volume-weighted average price, to slice those massive orders into smaller, hidden clips over a set duration.
And very frequently, that duration is the first hour of the cash session.
That's why the wider 60-minute window shows you where value is truly established. It literally takes an hour for that institutional volume to fully enter and settle the market. However, and this is a critical distinction you have to make in your chart reading, there's a massive difference between a developing range and a locked range.
Right, because while that 60-minute window is open, the range is drawn dashed on your chart. It's provisional.
Yes. It is actively expanding as price moves, which means it cannot be trusted as structural support or resistance yet.
No, because it's still moving.
Exactly. If we're, say, 30 minutes into the New York session, that IB is still developing. If a sudden influx of market buy orders pushes the high further out, that dashed box simply expands upward to track it.
So you can't treat a developing high as a concrete resistance level.
You really can't, because the institutional participants are still actively defining where fair value is. It's only when that 60-minute window officially closes that the range locks.
The dashed line becomes solid.
Right. The algorithm stops calculating new extremes, and that lockbox now behaves as a firm structural boundary for the remainder of the session.
I mean, I see retail traders get chopped up by this constantly. They try to short the high of a 30-minute range because it looks like a double top on a smaller time frame.
Yep, entirely ignoring that the IB window hasn't actually closed.
Exactly. The market is still actively seeking liquidity. It is still testing the structural integrity of that pipe. You just have to wait for the lock.
The lock represents a temporary consensus. It means that for the first hour of trading, under the highest volume conditions of the day, the highest point and the lowest point represent the extreme boundaries of accepted value.
Okay, so market participants looked at prices above the IB high and basically deemed them too expensive, shedding off buying.
Right. And they looked at prices below the IB low and deemed them too cheap, which shut off the selling. Therefore, anything that pushes outside of those locked boundaries later in the day is going to require significant, fresh, directional conviction to sustain.
So once those 15-minute and 60-minute ranges are locked on the chart, how do you actually execute trades against them? The core read here is acceptance, right?
Yes, acceptance is everything. If price holds above the IB high, you have a bullish edge. If it holds below the IB low, you have a bearish edge. The locked range becomes the baseline.
But I want to push back heavily on the standard breakout trading model here, because the textbook says you just buy the break of the high. But in reality, how do you know when a breakout is a genuine shift in value versus, you know, a calculated trap?
Honestly, recognizing that difference is arguably the most valuable skill in futures trading. The mechanics of the false breakout are entirely driven by trapped liquidity.
Okay, let's look at a concrete mechanical scenario on the ES.
Sure. Suppose the 60-minute IB locks. Then, at 10.45 a.m., price pushes aggressively outside the IB high. Momentum algorithms and late retail buyers see this as a breakout and aggressively market buy, right? They're piling into long positions.
I think it runs all day.
Exactly. But their buy orders provide the exact liquidity that larger smart money participants need to short into without moving the market against themselves.
Wow. Okay. So they're just absorbing all that retail buying.
Yes. And once that resting liquidity is absorbed, the buying dries up. Price stalls, then snaps violently back inside the IB and closes within the range. That is a clear rejection. It was never a breakout. It was a targeted liquidity grab.
Now, when that rejection happens, the crucial rule for execution is that your fade target, your profit objective for shorting that filled breakout, is the range's midline.
Correct.
But I have to question this. I always assumed if a breakout fails at the top, you target the opposite end of the range, like the IB low. It just seems logical that the top of the structure fails, the bottom is the next target. Am I thinking about the mechanics of this entirely wrong?
You are assuming a total collapse of value, which is a much lower probability outcome. You really have to consider the mechanics of offsides positioning here.
Okay, break that down for me. Why the midline specifically?
Because the midline represents the center of mass of that established fair value. When that breakout fails, the late participants who bought the highs are now trapped in losing positions.
Oh, right. They're stuck.
They're stuck. So as price drops back inside the range, their stop loss orders are triggered. And remember, a stop loss for a long position is executed as a market sell order.
So their panic actually fuels the downward move.
Precisely. That forced selling accelerates price back to the mean. But once price reaches the midline, the center of the established range, the pressure normalizes.
Because it hits the VPOC.
Exactly. The midline often aligns with the morning's volume point of control, the VPOC, which is the exact price where the most two-way business was conducted. It acts as a magnetic pull.
So aiming for the far edge, the IB low, requires assuming not just that the longs were trapped, but that there is fresh, aggressive short selling stepping in to drive price completely through fair value.
Which is a huge assumption. The midline is the high probability mean reversion target dictated by the mechanical unwinding of trap traders.
That makes perfect sense when you map out the actual order flow. You are trading the mean reversion generated by forced liquidations. But what about when the breakout is genuine?
Good question.
Like when you see true acceptance outside the IB, meaning price breaks the high, tests it from above, and actually sustains the push without snapping back inside, you need realistic targets for that. You can't just buy and hope it runs indefinitely.
No, definitely not. For genuine breakouts, practitioners use an extension projection. You project a target sized as a percentage of the established range itself. The standard institutional default is 150 to 200% of the IB range.
Let's walk through the math on that to make it concrete. If the ES established a 20-point initial balance during that first hour, 150% extension means you are adding a 30-point target extending upward from the breakout level.
That is the exact calculation. And the reason this works mechanically is that it quantifies the day's specific momentum. You are mapping a measured objective based on the actual volatility established in the first hour.
So if the initial fight to establish value was tight, say, only 10 points wide, the market is compressed.
Right, so a breakout might only have the energy to expand 15 points. But if the initial fight was a massive 40-point range, a genuine breakout has the fundamental energy and participation to expand 60 points. The initial energy dictates the expansion parameters.
Now, to properly trade the ES and NQ, we have to recognize they do not exist in a vacuum during U.S. regular trading hours. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, definitely.
The New York Open at 9:30 a.m. Eastern is actually a direct reaction to the context built overnight. If you view the market as a continuous handoff map between the Asia, London, and New York sessions, you gain a massive structural edge over traders who only stare at the U.S. cash session.
Absolutely. Running all three session tools simultaneously turns your chart from an isolated snapshot into a continuous narrative. You have to understand that each of these sessions has a distinct behavioral profile based on the mandates of the participants sitting at those regional desks.
Right. The liquidity they build or consume directly impacts how the next session will open. Let's walk through the mechanics of that escalation, starting with Asia.
Okay.
The Asian session, driven by Tokyo, Singapore, and Hong Kong, typically builds a tighter, highly contained range.
Yeah.
You're mostly looking at algorithmic hedging and lower participation in U.S. equities. It's essentially an accumulation phase.
It is accumulation, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, you see how that tight accumulation becomes weaponized by the next time zone.
Weaponized? How so?
Well, because volume in U.S. index futures is lower during the Asian session, the high and low of that tight range become very obvious visual targets, and liquidity pools of stop-loss orders build up just outside them.
Then London opens, and the European institutions come online.
And London brings the first real volume injection of the day. Because they have a mandate to execute size, they need liquidity. European desks frequently produce the first genuine directional push, intentionally breaking out of that tight Asian accumulation range.
So they drive price above the Asian high or below the Asian low specifically to trigger those resting stop losses.
Exactly. Once they consume that liquidity, they often establish the preliminary trend for the morning,
which sets the stage for New York. By the time New York opens, which defaults to 15:30 on the underlying platform time, you get the largest volume injection of the entire 24-hour cycle.
Yes.
The U.S. institutional participants step in and look at what London just did with the structure. Do they accept the value London established, or do they aggressively reject it?
Watching that decision is where reading the sessions side by side becomes your primary advantage. And this dynamic creates the most critical volatility zone on the global map. The London and New York overlap.
Oh, yeah. That overlap window, roughly the first 2 hours of the U.S. cash session, is notoriously chaotic.
It is chaotic because of fundamentally clashing mandates. You have fresh U.S. participants arriving at their desks, initiating entirely new positions for the day with massive capital.
Right.
But simultaneously, European participants who have been trading for hours are preparing to close their books and take profits before they go home. When fresh U.S. volume arrives looking to initiate precisely as established European volume is executing market orders to exit, you get immense structural friction.
It becomes a prime spot for massive reversal days to form. If London drove the market heavily in one direction all morning, the New York overlap is often where that trend violently exhausts.
Exactly. The U.S. liquidity absorbs the European profit-taking, halts the trend, and reverses it back through the established ranges.
That is exactly the mechanism behind morning reversals. If you were only looking at the U.S. open range in isolation, that reversal looks like random, unexplainable volatility.
Right, but if you were tracking the handoff, you see clearly that New York simply rejected London's initial balance.
So to execute these reads flawlessly, your chart mechanics really have to match your trading style. Now, as a crucial reminder for everyone listening, tracking the initial balance and open range is a pure level drawing methodology.
Yes, very important point.
It is not an automated system. It tells you exactly where the institutional boundaries are.
Yep.
But there are no built-in entry signals, no automatic stop losses, and no calculated take profits.
Nope. The actual trade decision, the position sizing, and the risk management remain entirely on you.
But there is a vital mechanical limitation with these tools you have to account for. Your calculation window cannot be finer than your chart's underlying time frame.
Yeah, this is a strict data aggregation reality that trips up a lot of technical traders. If you place a 15-minute open range tool onto a 30-minute candlestick chart, the software cannot extract a 15-minute level from a pre-compiled 30-minute bar.
The math just fails.
The math fails. The calculation simply collapses to the high and low of that first 30-minute candle, entirely corrupting your fast read.
So if you see your OR and ID boxes overlapping perfectly when they clearly shouldn't, that's your diagnostic clue. You either have to drop your chart to a lower time frame, like a 5-minute or 1-minute chart, or you have to lengthen the OR window to match the coarser chart time frame.
Precisely. You also have to consider holidays and weekend gaps. If a market is closed and a session has no data in its designated time window, the study simply draws nothing for that occurrence. It doesn't project or invent a false range from empty data.
Given these mechanics, what are the specific tactical presets practitioners use depending on the asset class they are trading?
Well, the presets depend entirely on the instrument's inherent volatility profile and the trader's required execution speed. For classic ES and NQ regular trading hours, the absolute standard is the 15-minute OR and the 60-minute IB.
Right, because that accurately captures the initial cash open at 9:30 a.m. Eastern and the full first hour of institutional TWAP execution.
Exactly.
But if you are trading a highly aggressive short-term strategy like opening range scalping, you physically cannot wait 60 minutes to make a decision. The opportunity cost is just too high.
Yeah, in high-frequency environments, practitioners drop the presets significantly. They utilize a fast 5-minute OR and a 30-minute IB.
And this configuration is heavily utilized in zero DTE options environments, right? 0 days to expiration.
It is. When you are dealing with options that expire the exact same day, gamma hedging by market makers violently accelerates intraday moves. You don't have an hour to wait for a lock range because by minute 45, the entire daily directional move might already be priced in and exhausted.
Wow, okay. So the 5-minute extreme gives you a rapid breakout trigger, and the 30-minute box provides a compressed structural baseline.
Exactly.
And what about markets that never close, like the 2047 cycles of FX or crypto? I mean, the concepts of an open or a close are completely arbitrary there.
For FX, you keep all three global sessions running simultaneously. You set Asia, London, and New York to their respective real local time zones in your software, for example, pointing the Asia session directly to the Tokyo time zone, letting the system handle daylight saving adjustments automatically.
Which allows you to track those liquidity handoffs across the entire 24-hour cycle.
Right. Now, for crypto, practitioners generally use their local chart time zone to establish a mental daily reset, or they pick a custom synthetic open that aligns with historically high volume nodes.
But regardless of where you pin the open, you maintain those 15-minute and 60-minute windows from that anchor point to accurately track the daily volatility expansions.
Exactly. It's all about consistency from that anchor point.
The concepts, the mechanical reads, and the session maps we've broken down today are visualized using the free Motive Wave Initial Balance Open Range Study, which you can find detailed at wickflow.com.
When price violently rejects an initial balance extreme and snaps back to the midline, ask yourself who is just trapped on the wrong side of that breakout and how does their forced liquidation become the exact fuel needed to drive the reversal.